This Delicious episode features founder of Mindful Meats and non-GMO advocate Claire Hemmingyard, recorded live at the global event in California, USA in 2013.
Hi everyone, I just really want to start with a wow and thank you moment. I came to do lectures and I was in the middle of work, and anyone who works and or has a family and is starting their own company or whatever, things are crazy. You always have a million things going on. And so now that I'm here, I've been able to take a moment and really breathe and appreciate the space that the Do Lectures has created and the participants have created by coming and supporting an environment like this. And I've been really blown away by the vulnerability that the other speakers have shown. And so I just want to take a moment of gratitude to say thanks for everyone, and that I hope that this next talk, that I'm going to share, isn't too sobering and inspires everyone to feel everything all the time. So without further ado, as you guys know, as I just mentioned, I'm the CEO and co-founder of a company called Mindful Meats. And practically speaking, we work with farmers and ranchers right now in Marin and Sonoma who raise their beef out on pastures. And our entire processing chain is certified organic, and we are the first and currently only non-GMO project verified beef company in the United States. And we carry these certifications not for marketing, but because they're very, very core to why we get up every day and why we do what we do and why I do what I do. So for those of you who aren't familiar, and this is relevant, but for those of you who aren't familiar with what organics and being non-GMO verified mean in livestock production, being organic means that no parasiticides have ever been used in production of that animal, no antibiotics have ever been used in production of the animal, no growth hormones, the animal has never eaten a GMO crop or any crop that has been grown using pesticides, herbicides, insecticides, the list goes on. There's also a pasture requirement, so the animal has to spend time out on pasture for a percentage of its life. And being non-GMO project verified for us takes being organic to another level, because it ensures that any feed, if any, that's fed to the animal outside of pasture has been, and if it's at high risk for GMO, so corn, soy, canola, sugar beets, et cetera, has been tested to ensure that it's not contaminated with GMOs. And what this does is really strengthen the supply chain to ensure that we are not allowing contamination to occur in an organic system. So how did I start a meat company? How did I end up as the CEO and founder of a meat company? I often revisit this question. So I was around the age of 26 when I started this, and I'm 30 now. And I was at a point in my life where, unbeknownst to me really, there was a lot of tumultuous stuff going on in my life. I was working in the tech industry, and I'd come to California in order to work in social entrepreneurship. So I know I always wanted to do something for good in the world, and I always saw business as the tool to be able to really create change. So I ended up, even though I said I would never work in tech, I'm not a tech person, I don't want to work in tech. Of course, I ended up in tech because I was in San Francisco and I wanted to get business experience, and that's where the jobs were. So I ended up working at Salesforce, amazing experience, and then I wanted to figure out how to start a company. So I jumped ship a couple of years later and ended up working at a startup as fifth employee running sales, business development, operations. And at this point, I was 25 when I joined the company. I had a lot of responsibility, and it was an amazing experience, but we were a company that worked with data targeting to increase advertising value on the internet. And at the same time, I was spending all of my personal time really paying attention to the news and really hearing about all these crazy things that are going on in our world and our environment, and all of the sort of negative things that are happening, and all of the waste that's coming out of our human life. And I ended up really focusing on food because that's what I enjoy the most, and that's what I care about. And so I was paying attention to all of those different things, and I kind of was having this realization that I was living this dual life, where I was working in an industry that ended up promoting the very thing that I don't believe in, which is a consumer-based society, or a society that just consumes and consumes and consumes for no other reason other than, you know, an economy based on money, but that's a whole other conversation. So as I was processing this, I was also personally going through a lot of issues. I was in a 7-year relationship that was really not a good relationship. And I was trying to figure out, okay, what do I do first? Like, do I get out of the relationship first, and then deal with work later? Do I do work later? And then, you know, where's my safety net? Honestly, everything was coming out of this place of fear. I was really trying to work through all of this really, really significant fear of being out on the world on my own, and how do I actually come into the person that I wanted to be? And then one day, my life was threatened. And it was just this amazing experience where everything came into perspective. Just everything came into perspective. Nothing else really mattered other than the fact that I was alive. And that I had this opportunity to walk forward and be the person that I wanted to be. Nothing else mattered. And that led me on a path to trying to create change in our world. And ultimately, the reason why I do what I do, and ultimately the reason why everyone with Mindful Meats does what we do, is because our purpose in life is life. It's really, really quite simple. So to boil it down, we ended up focusing on agriculture because to be really practical, we wanted to create change in the world, and there's so many different things going on in the world. As I mentioned, it's really difficult to ignore all the negative things. And agriculture is focuses on one of our core human essential needs, so food. We all need food to survive. And looking at what's happened in the United States and in industrial agriculture, we really focused here because, one, we live here. And two, the industrial system that has come about over the past, you know, 70 or 80 years has a gigantic impact on our environment worldwide and is starting to spread to other developing nations. So I'm going to take a few minutes to kind of give you a little sobering effect of what is going on. So in livestock, most of our animals, you know, around 95% of our animals, are raised in confinement. What you're looking at right now is a satellite image of a beef feedlot. And beef gets a lot of attention because it's out in the open. You can see it. Unlike the other two major proteins in the United States, chicken and pork, those animals are actually born and raised in warehouses. So you can't really take pictures of what that looks like unless you go in. And so does this look very natural to anybody? No, okay. In addition, 80% of the antibiotics that we consume in the United States are fed to livestock preemptively to manage any, you know, possible outbreaks of negative things that are going on in those in confinement situations. Getting away from animal livestock specifically, the vast majority of our cropland is dedicated to a concept called monoculture. So we have, you know, maybe 3 or 4 major crops: corn, canola, alfalfa, cotton, rice, sugar beets, etc., that take up the vast majority of our agricultural land in the United States. And these crops are grown in the same location year over year. And they're sold to very, very large markets, and they're turned into value-added products. So this system has been actually kind of an amazing feat. If you really like take a step back and you look at what's happening, we have been in an amazing time of abundance in the United States. We're looked at as one of the world's greatest food producers. And we've been able to, it's really happened right after World War II, during a time where we had to figure out how to feed people and revive the spirit of America and do it in a way that was affordable. And so this system has come out of those intentions. But there are definitely some consequences to the human factor and the human element of intensive industrial production that we're starting to see today. And if you zone in on that feedlot, this is what it really looks like. That's a gigantic manure lagoon. And manure and waste isn't a bad thing in nature. But when you take it and you put a lot of it in a really small area, you begin to see really, really negative consequences. This is running off and polluting our water. This is running off and polluting our land and preventing a lot of the land that could be used for food production to not be able to be used. And it's creating environments where pathogens and other bacteria have a very concentrated area to breed and to grow. What the use of the antibiotics is doing, and the reason the livestock producers are using antibiotics, is because of that, those concentrated waste environments. They're having to deal with the effects that are coming out of that system, which are bacteria and disease. And so they feed antibiotics to livestock in order to prevent a large majority of outbreaks that could occur. What's happening is that nature evolves more quickly than we do as humans, and nature is smarter than we are. And these pathogens and these bacteria, they want to survive and they want to grow. And so what they're doing is out-evolving the tools that we have to control them. And so leaders from the CDC and leaders from the WHO are really trying to bring this message forward of, hey, this antibiotics is the one tool that we in the world have really created to manage gigantic outbreak of disease in our world. And something that we really don't need to do is causing us to lose that tool and therefore risking the entire health of world populations. This is not a small thing. And so that's one of the major things that's going on. In addition, pulling back and looking at the crops, what's happening is the monoculture-based system is not creating an environment that revitalizes and brings a closed loop back to the soil and to the land. So we're seeing in many areas topsoil that has taken thousands and thousands of years to produce to be reduced by roughly 50% in less than 50 years. This is a gigantic problem. We are destroying and poisoning the very thing we need to produce our food, and we don't know how to replace it. So this is very sobering information, and it's kind of hard to remember when we're in a place like Campo Vida that is so spectacular. And thank you for Anna and Gary for maintaining land in the way that you do. But basically what's happening is that collectively, in our unawareness, we are walking towards a path of destruction, self-destruction. And as people, as a person who has faced death and the possibility of that, I don't want this to happen. So the reason our team is working on meat is because, at least in the United States and growing more and more over the world, livestock production is the single largest contributor to the destruction that agriculture is causing. It doesn't have to be that way. In addition to the two obvious reasons, with the confined animal feeding operations and those negativities and the antibiotic use, livestock consume roughly 80% of the grain that's produced in the United States, and certain crops is up to 98%, like soy, for example. So our strategy is to reform meat production, take it back to the way that it's supposed to be with animals living on pasture and not consuming so much of the unrenewable resources that we have. And our challenge, though, is that we are tiny and the meat industry is gigantic. It is a gigantic industry, and four companies control 80% of the production and the sourcing and the selling of that meat. They have absolutely no incentive to change whatsoever because they're driven by profits unless consumers demand it and make a change. So our solution, the only thing we can do, is to compete. So we're building a brand and we're building a company that works directly with farmers and ranchers that allows them to produce animals in a system outside of the one that exists and to flourish in an environment like this. And so we're able to pay our producers roughly 40% above market rate so that they're able to maintain their farm economically. And we have very minor costs transferred onto the consumer, a couple dollars more a pound at the store, but no hidden cost externally to the world. So while we're able to support farmers that look like this and like this, we feel really grateful that we're able to do this work. And how this is relevant to all of you guys is, as you are walking down your path in life, you're going to be faced with challenges, and sometimes you can be in a position where you can change quickly, and sometimes you're going to be stuck and you have obligations and you can't change. But what you can remember is that we are all interconnected in this world. We are all made of the same stuff and we are all one. And you can make daily choices to have a better an impact on the world and to have a more reduced impact on the world and to create life wherever you go. So all I ask is that as you move forward, do it for life, do it for love, and just do it for our kids. So thanks.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out. For our weekly curation of wonder and optimism, sign up to our newsletter by visiting thedolectures.com/newsletter.